Blog Talk Radio.
Playing Sports City Chefs from Amazon Music.
Yeah.
Back, listen, enjoy the vibe. Sip something, light it up, enjoy the ride. Cause the Sports City Chefs is on the night. In the kitchen cooking up, they on the rise.
Sports City, Chefs, Chefs. Sports City, Sports City, Chefs, Chefs. Sports City, Sports City, Chefs, Chefs. Sports City, Sports City, Chefs,
Chefs. Yes, Lord, we got a brand new president. What? Joe Biden, we riding, I pray you heaven sent. Word from the wise, my people stay ahead of me.
Come on,
I've been relevant, trying to survive the elements. It ain't no love in these streets, these dudes telling it. Case go from cold to hot, state evidence. Kaboom, Sports City Chefs is in the room. Cooking up hot topics to put up on your spoon. They well in tune, blown like a flower in June. Superman verse MF Doom, the clouds loom. So tell a friend, it's the Sports City Chefs again. Pay attention, tune in, we on the set again.
Connecticut.
Blazer loosened up the tie, stepped aside, the kitchen timeless is alive. Sports City, what's going on? It's your boy TP Timeless back at the helm. The call-in number is 929-477-2759. We got you locked and loaded for the next 90 minutes or more in Sports City. You could have been anywhere else in the world, but you are here with the chefs. Sports City, we have some breaking news as of this morning. And it's a somber situation, and it's always similar to a lot of the Sunday mornings that you run into this coming off of an interesting Saturday, that we have bad news. And I do want to have a moment of silence to the late and legendary head coach of the, or former head coach of the Florida State Seminoles, Bobby Bowden, passes away at the age of 91 as of this morning. Thoughts, prayers, and condolences to the Bowden family. I do want to spill into it a lot and try to start this show up as best as I can to try and show him everything that I can in this day. But moment of silence for Bobby Bowden. For City. So we're going to get into this as best as I possibly can. I'm going to start right there and get to everything that I know or remember of him. Now, people here, no, me being as the resident diehard Hurricanes fan, so this is like me having to test my will, if you will, or knowing how much that I was always against. And still, I still have a like a sport dislike for Florida State because it's competitive nature, you know. But never wanting to see any harm done to anybody, and definitely I'm not good with death. Like, I don't like to see people go, you know. And knowing how monumental he was to Tallahassee, Florida, the respected university there as well, a lot of tremendous athletes that have, you know, gone through his teachings and coaching abilities, believing in a lot of those athletes in the area, well, the country, because, you know, a lot of the athletes come from all across the country, but more, I say more or less in the state of Florida, where you try to rope off a lot of that talent to come to him, is another thing. The one thing that I think about that's just heavy on my heart is, like, all of the people that he did impact from, let me just think of the guys and names that I always think about, like Lavernius Coles, like Derrick Brooks, like Warwick Dunn, like Charlie Ward, like I think of the names, more names that come to me, like Jameis Winston, Kelvin Benjamin, Dalvin Cook. All of these guys are prominent players that made it to the NFL and did something with themselves. And the more impactful one that I think about every single day, and it's like when I talk about Florida State, it makes me, like, grit my teeth, and it's like they got him, you know, because it's the rivalry of Florida State and Miami. And just knowing that we go at it every year, it's the battle for the best in the state. I could care less if the Florida Gators want to jump in this, but I always think about Deion Sanders also. And it's like how Deion, you know, made a name for himself going to Florida State, building up the primetime situation, all under the hands of Bobby Bowden. And Bobby Bowden allowed this guy to be himself, flourish, and turn into the icon at the position, but also being a figure that can sell his name. I do have somebody here in the building calling out of the 615. Mike, welcome to the brunch. How are you feeling this morning?
Hey, man, I'm good. Always happy to stop in and chop it up. I saw this about Bobby Bowden this morning. I had a feeling that pretty early on we were going to go into him. So, it's always sad to hear. I heard a couple weeks ago that he had been ill and that it wasn't it didn't look very good. So, yeah, man, you just threw out a bunch of names, recognized them all, right? Like, and I definitely Bobby Bowden was very influential and a key figure. He will be missed for sure. Respect.
And just like I said, he brought, three national championships back to Tallahassee. The rivalry is so heavy for me that it would be, as long as I can remember the rivalry, me watching college football, but it's like, every time I seen that maroon and gold, I would see them or see the soldier, the Seminole soldier, ride in on the horse and throw the spear in the ground with it flaming and things like that. And every time the camera would move, they would go right back to Bobby Bowden, whether he's wearing the shades to make sure you can't see his eyes and a low brim, or he'll have the shades off and just looking like he's ready for a war. And it's like, just me and the rivalry of me just not liking Florida State because they always would bring it to us. It's either them or us. And whoever wins the game gets bragging rights for a whole year. And me knowing people not only in my area that are Seminole fans, and I got Hurricane fans on this side, but it's also people that I know down there in Florida that are Seminole fans. Or, just knowing how strong the rivalry is, it just everything I could think of, wide left, wide right, I could think about all of those games. And the matchup where Michael Irvin and Deion were going at it, and Michael Irvin had that epic touchdown. Like, I could think about so many different instances, even though, they call it to you because of quarterback you, and I feel like we have the edge in the matchup or the rivalry. But every single bit, even playing them now, right, even watching Miami play Florida State now, I always think of Florida State with Bobby Bowden. I can't think of any other coach, even if they have other coaches on the sideline, whether it was Jimbo Fisher, whether it's Norville, like whoever's on the sideline, I'm thinking about it, or just in his spirit alone, like just what he brings to the game. And this is a monumental guy. For him coaching into his 70s, 80s, and passing away at the age of 91, he's lived a great life, influential to a lot of people, like I said, to some of the more critical names in college football came out of his lineage. And I did not want to start this show without recognizing that, knowing some of the players that came out of Florida State that I respect, or a lot of them, not even some, just like even within the rivalry, like knowing that we had to go at it. But it's like, we know these guys are dangerous. It could change the game at any given moment. I still remember one year with Charlie Ward and Warwick Dunwoody together, and they beat Miami so bad. I really think they scored like 77 points that game, if I'm not mistaken. I do want to look up the score, but it got bad, and they beat us so bad. I was so mad that they beat us, and it took us a while to get back at them, but by this time, it was like Charlie Ward and Warwick Dunn left. So I'm like, no, I want to get them back, like bring that back, because Bobby Bowden knew, like, how many heartbreaking losses he had to us. It was like he made us pay for it in the worst way. So believe me, it's been some epic storms. Watch, that's what I'm saying, the wide left one, like, I watched three games come down to the kick. I watched Miami have to fight their way back, and Willis McGahee and Ken Dorsey saved the day. Like, I watched Dalvin Cook go on a four-year run, all four of his years at Florida State, beating Miami and couldn't get over the hump. Like, believe me, this rivalry is, like, epic. Like, epic. I'm like, happy that I'm a Miami Hurricane fan to have been in the midst of a lot of Bobby Bowden and how he, hung tight with that university as long as he did before he ended up retiring and enjoying the rest of his life and career with his family and things like that. But I'm not going to, get past this without recognizing him, because he's an epic person in football, not just college football, but I think all of football. Even the guys that have entered the Hall of Fame probably recognize him the same way.
And to your point, TP, there's so many different coaches now that have either ended up somewhere else or have more than one stop or whatever, right? Like, and other than Joe Pa, who for years we saw at Penn State, there's very few coaches that, like, I can think about. I mean, obviously historians are, you know, before this time or whatever, but, like, over the last two or three decades, four decades that I've been around, there's not many coaches that you just associate with one team and that spent all their time with that one team anymore. And I feel like in a lot of ways, Bobby Bowden was kind of the last of that breed as far as coaches that just spent, you know, years and years and years with one team and was synonymous with that program. You know, with your comment that you said about Florida State, you're always going to think about Coach Bowden. Like, it's one of the few situations and places where that's the case anymore. And it may be the last time that we ever really see that.
Who would you recognize more, since it's like he's the mainstay at Florida State? It's funny that both of the schools in with State or Penn State with Joe Paterno. Who do you recognize more, especially with their names be atop like the win list in college football also? Is it more Joe Pa, is it more Bobby Bowden? I mean, Joe Pa's, I think, more the more recognizable, but as of everything that went down, you know, and his retiring, that what happened out there in Pennsylvania kind of put a big question mark moving, you know, past his retiring and things of that nature. And Bobby Bowden, you know, I think health issues kind of carry him off the field. But who do you feel like has the edge, just to have fun with both of these guys, even though I respect both of them and their passings as well?
I think to me, the way all that ended, like what you just referenced right there, the way all that ended and happened, I probably give Coach Bowden the edge now. But like growing up and for years, for most of my life, like, I feel like I feared Joe Pa's teams more, even though, like, in a lot of ways, there were years that Florida State had more talent and whatever else. I just remember Joe Pa's teams always being ready to play at bowl games, and it didn't matter who they were playing. Even if they were playing teams that were more talented than them, they always found a way, even in bowl games, like off break. Like, you give him time to prepare, and he was going to be hard to handle in a bowl game. So, but now, I would say that all that other stuff that went down in Pennsylvania cast a dark shadow in a lot of ways. So I would probably give Coach Bowden the edge.
And this is tough for me, but and this makes this conversation even more interesting, and I could do this for the shoe. Is that truly a situation that would happen with Jerry Sandusky? A situation that we may think that Joe Paterno was aware of what was going on all of those years that actually messes up his legacy in Penn State?
To me, I think so. Right? Like, and I just feel like as rampant as some of that stuff was going on, I feel like I find it hard to believe that he didn't know something. I don't know if he understood the degree of it. It's hard to say one way or another because, you know, obviously the man's not here to defend it or whatever. But and I also think, like, too, I've heard a lot of people say, not even regarding something like this, but I've heard some of the coaches that I respect the most at times when things are going on in their program, I've heard them say, you know what, it starts with me. Like, if I'm the head guy, I'm supposed to be, you know what I'm saying? So, like, I don't know. I don't think that we can look at it and not kind of point the finger some at him. It was on his watch and his program, even if he didn't know. But I still find it hard to believe that he didn't know anything.
And that's what makes it tough, because that situation happened, and then once all of the legal people came and got involved, Joe Paterno retires instantly and then passes away. So it's like, was it heartbreak? And, you know, a lot of people say that they're attached to, like, things they love, whether it's family, their job, or, you know, people that are close to them. It's heartbreak. And knowing that he was probably attached to every one of those kids that came through Penn State and did what they could for the university. And just thinking, like, how they didn't let these guys put their names on the back of the jersey. And I don't really know the tall tale of it, because Notre Dame does it also. But it's like, they do that to, like, forget a lot of these guys' names. You know what I'm saying? And, like, let that go by. And it's like looking at, you know, Bobby Bowden's situation, you don't really hear of too much banter coming out of Tallahassee. But knowing that these guys are, you know, the top two coaches all time because of how long they coached and how much success they've had at their head coaching position means a lot. But I just want to, you know, look at how they coach these players and not what happened off the field. And it hurts me to look at Joe Paterno, because I could just think of all of the memorable situations, whether he was going up against Ohio State or those guys out there in the Big Ten, or the games that Penn State played up against Miami, and how that we would go back and forth winning up against each other. You know, so it's like I have, you know, ties with both of these coaches, whether it's Penn State beating us or us getting back at them, or Florida State beating us or us getting back at them. It's like knowing that how both of these guys are gone, and one has more of a respectable closure to their career, one has a questionable one that we will never hear more about because of the passing that he had. But I definitely wanted to, you know, go ahead.
No, and I think to me, but at the end of the day, I think there may be, you know, another person or two that gets in this discussion. But to me, I have always separated these two guys and one other name as kind of the goats of college football coaches, or the deans, if you will, longtime college football coaches. But Joe Paterno, Bobby Bowden, and Eddie Robinson have always, in my opinion, been in a category or a league of their own, so to speak, apart from any of their coaches to me. And I've gone back and forth on my whole thoughts on whether or not, like, all that stuff that we just talked about completely took him out of that category, took Joe Pa out of that category for me or not. And it depends on what day you ask me, you know what I mean? Just because it's such a tough, dynamic. But to me, like, because even when we were young, time, these guys had been around for a little while. You know what I'm saying? Like, so to me, these are kind of the old heads or the OGs of coaching to me. And those are the three names that I've kind of always thought about or separated from everybody else. These two that we just mentioned and Coach Eddie Robinson.
And see, the thing about Eddie Robinson is how long that he coached, and he had the highest win total when he was around before he passed away too. And then Joe Paterno caught him, and then Bobby Bowden caught Joe Paterno. Like, just knowing the three of these guys are tied together, I give more, you know, of the up to the first two being Joe Paterno and Bobby Bowden, because I feel like they have more players into the pros. But I can't take anything away from Eddie Robinson for him to do something so awesome for historical black college, you know. So I give him his credit for what he's done, being able to make these guys winners and also impact the NFL in certain dynamics, especially rest in peace to my father. His favorite football team was the Washington at the time. Well, I just say the football team before I even say it the wrong way. But and I know one of his more impactful guys was Doug Williams. And Doug Williams and the memorable run he had up against Denver. And he would just always just brag about that game and how he was destroying the Broncos and put up so many points with the posse and things of that nature. So it's like knowing that Eddie Robinson gets credit in that tone as well. But there's been players that came out of Grambling that definitely go under the radar that don't get their credit from what Eddie Robinson had his hands in too. So I definitely can't go without not recognizing him, and I'm thankful that you brought his name up also. But it was just quick to bring up at least Joe Paterno and Bobby Bowden, because they're the more recent passings, if you will, as legendary head coaches in the college football game. Okay, so we'll get past that. Definitely wanted to make sure I got that out the way. Show him his respect. Rest in peace to Bobby Bowden, Robert Bowden, however it goes down. I'm going to say this. The rivalry is you, no matter what. Florida State, Miami, I really think, to me, is the best rivalry in college football. But a lot of people go, oh, no, you know, Ohio State, Michigan is longer because they're older. Like, I get it. But that thing has lost its luster. Ohio State's been beating the crap out of Michigan for, like, the past 20-something years. Like, I think Michigan might have squeezed in, like, two or three wins within the past 20 years or something like that. But it's like, that's not even a rivalry. Like, it's out of this world. Like, and what other ones? I could probably think of, like, Alabama, LSU.
Alabama, Auburn. You said Iron Bowl. And then
right.
Probably, you know, some people would say USC, Notre Dame is a big national rivalry. But, I mean, yeah, it's a small list. It's Florida State, Miami. It's Ohio State, Michigan, though it's, like you said, not competitive anymore. Alabama, Auburn. You know, the problem is LSU just rivals everybody. They don't like any of some people would say Texas, Oklahoma, and that Red River rivalry thing.
Mm-hmm. Who else?
Some people
Georgia,
say the
Georgia, Florida,
the world's largest cocktail party.
Right. Because they don't even play. They usually don't even get to play that game at home. They play that in Orlando or Jacksonville.
Jacksonville.
A lot of the time.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Every year. So, I mean, it's a few of them. Of course, you know, you got your state battles or whatever, but I feel like those are probably the biggest ones that kind of are on that same level. And it's funny because, so Florida State always play last game of the year, right? Like at the end of the season, that last weekend when all the in-state rivalries start playing each other. But I've always thought of Florida State, Miami as a bigger game than Florida State and Florida.
Me
but,
too.
I get biased about it all the time. It depends on the year. I'm sorry.
No. You talk. Don't worry about me. I just said that. Me too. I'm on the same page as you. I'm biased as ever. I think Miami Florida State is the biggest rivalry in college football. Especially when they get ready to play. I don't know if you know, but as soon as the game starts, especially if we're in Miami. Miami goes through the smoke, right? Like they set up like that smoke and the hurricanes run through it or whatever. And it's like, even before we get to that point where the game begins, they'll be stretching out in the field and doing their reps, you know, whether it's quarterbacks and receivers or the playmakers, running backs, or the defense trying to stretch and do their thing out in the field. They'll always meet at the 50-yard line. It'll always be a doggone fight, like pushing, shoving. Like, you know, it's just incredible.
That's how you know, because I see the fights, pregame fights with Alabama, Auburn, even though to a lot of people it wouldn't hold the same level, but, like, in the state of Mississippi, like, that Mississippi State Ole Miss rivalry every year, like, you know what I'm saying? Like, fights on the field, man, and folks be right before,
and the game ain't even started. And the game ain't even started. We got penalties before the game started. Like, it's like, yo, wait, hold on. How did the refs get out there? Why y'all didn't separate them before they met at the 50 and all 53 going at it? Like, no, like, stop them before that get any crazier. And then it's like, the crazy part is the guy that I'm talking about. And respectfully so, because I respect him, love him now that he's passed on. But, like, the robbery was going on, it's like, I'm gritting my teeth at him. But Bobby Bowden letting them guys live, like go out there and you competing against them. Don't let them push you guys around. Go out there and fight Miami back. And you know we not giving up no ground. Like we home. And the crazy part about the rivalry between Florida State and Miami is a lot of those guys on each respective team university, they know each other. They grew up together. A lot of them grew up in like Miami area. Like they played in all those respective big time high schools down there in Miami where a lot of the nation goes and fuels their university because they go get all of the talent out of the south area of Florida, you know? Like, you get some in the northern region of Florida, that's that nature. But a lot of the talent in college football comes from Louisiana, California, Texas, and Florida. So these colleges, respectively, across the board, try to fill up as much as they can, be like, here go a scholarship, get your tail up here and make a difference happen. And respectfully so, when it's Florida State Miami, they all know each other. So that's what probably intensifies it even more, because it's like after the game, we'll probably be cool. We'll probably meet up when we go back home for Thanksgiving or Christmas or whatever. But just knowing while the game is on, the game is on. And it's kind of like the way I grew up, you know, especially the city I'm from in high school, Stanford High and West Hill. Like, it'll be like that, you know, like the game will start. We're enemies. The game over, it's like we're going to go out because we will play that game on Thanksgiving. After everybody go home and eat the Thanksgiving dinner, everybody going to hang out anyway somehow. Right. So I get it. I know how it is. And just to know that that's a different level of football, like, incredible. So, like we just mentioned, I think the only one that's comparable to me probably would be Ohio State Michigan, just because of how long that rivalry's gone on. But it, to me, and I don't know if I'm being personal about it, but I feel like I am being personal. I feel like that rivalry's lost its luster. I don't care if they play that game. To me, Michigan is going to have to win like 9 years straight. They got to win like at least 9 years straight to be like, okay, it's a rivalry. They can't just win this year or win this year and next year and then, okay, Ohio State goes back to badgering them. Ohio State rules them, even to the fact of when, Michigan had the top defense in the nation. They had the best defense in the nation. Everybody's like, okay, this is the year Michigan's going to win. Ohio State wins the game like 62 to like 13. It's like, wait, what? Like, that's the top defense in the nation? They put up 60? Like, so Michigan has a lot to do. And personally, like, I respected Harbaugh while he was in Stanford or when he was running with San Francisco with Kaepernick. But for him to go to Michigan and not really do that much changing, and they gave him an extension too. It's like, not only does he have to get this extension look right, but you got to start winning. At least you got to put a string of wins together up against Ohio State. You can do whatever you want in that schedule. If you lose to them again, it's like, what did they say? And I think they signed up for like a 5-year extension. It's something crazy, but it's like, what did he do? Like, what did he do to earn that? He's having questionable.
You're right. You're spot on. If you look at the recruiting, there is nothing coming down the line that tells me that Michigan's about to be able to put a run together against Ohio State. If I'm looking at recruiting year in and year out and what these teams tend to be bringing in, like, he better find a superstar. He better find a superstar quarterback. He better catch lightning in a bottle somewhere, because just looking at the recruiting across the board. But to add to what you're saying and to just add a little bit of a different wrinkle, I think Alabama and Auburn is every bit that kind of rivalry too. I put that on up there on that level as well. And I don't like Alabama or Auburn.
I get it. You're a Tiger. He's a Tiger out of the, you know, Baton Rouge area. I get it. But like I said, I'm biased myself. Just knowing how we went to war every year, that game it's got its electricity to it. And it's all across the board. To me, it'd be star-studded. Where a lot of these players are going at it across the board and end up getting into the league and end up being something. And you know that a lot of that gameplay comes from what they've recognized or played within the rivalry between the Seminoles and the Hurricanes. Like that, I'm biased to it because I watch it every year, and I've been getting screamed at, yelled upon for the past 7 or 8 years from me now having a social media following, especially on Facebook. And a lot of the people that I've connected with down there in South Beach are screaming at me, you better get down here for the Florida State-Miami game. I'm not playing with you. We got the best tailgate in college football. They actually, I think 3 years ago, they sent me a video of the tailgate down there in Miami against Florida State. But they do it every game. But they were having, like, kegs of, like, liquor. Like, not just kegs of beer. Like, you're thinking, like, Bud Light, Budweiser, whatever, Rolling Rock, Heineken, whatever they doing. No, they had kegs of, like, Jägermeister, kegs of, like, Tito's, kegs of. I'm like, these people go wild. Like this is before the game. Like, everybody in there going crazy. So they you see what we do? You come down here, you family already, we already got you. They like, any tailgate you want to walk in across the parking lot, we got you. Like, and I'm like, I got to get to Florida. You know, like,
right,
it's like
yeah.
always something something always happens, like around the time the game goes down and I miss it. They'd be like, yo, you get on my nerves. You better come next year, even if we in Tallahassee. So I have to get to that game. I want to get down there this year, but I'm dealing with so many people getting married in these months right here that it's kind of bogging me down, but I do want to get to one of them games. Okay, so we'll have that discussion because I can get into this rivalry and everything that's going on down there. But Bobby Bowden, truly one of the best. I can't overlook that, even though, like, you make me grit my teeth in saying this because of the, how strong I am in this rivalry. But your passing has definitely touched me. And this is similar to how I felt about, like, Kobe Bryant and him being a Laker. And I didn't like Kobe just because of competitive nature and, like, just his swagger, everything that he did. When he passed, I'm like the world stopped to me. I'm like, wait, hold on. The guy that I didn't like is gone now, and it's like now I'm sentimental. Like, oh, my God, he's a legend. He's great. It's the same way I feel about Bobby Bowden right now. So, Bobby, awesome life, awesome career, awesome coaching legacy. I'm trying to show as much respect as possible, but I do want to send you up the right way. We'll get into the rest of the show. We have an hour left. The call number is 929-477-2759. Continue to check in at sportscitychefs.com. We have merchandise that we're selling, T-shirts, hoodies, coffee mugs, things of that nature. Check us out, blogs, interviews, everything. Okay, so the Summer Olympics is coming to a close as of this weekend. The USA is actually dominating with medal count across the board, especially in gold, in which, me speaking on gold, I don't know how interested you are in this, but I do want to ask you this question. The women's basketball team is in their – they just won their seventh straight gold medal in women's basketball. So that goes back 28 years, right? So that would go to 92.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, 92, because we had the off year this year, so it adds it up to that now. So since Barcelona all the way up, Barcelona, Atlanta, Sydney,
that
all of those years
eight.
That happened.
So 96.
Is that
eight?
That would be
in
32. Four times eight is 32. That'd be, so seven, four times seven would be 28. No?
Yeah, but the thing is, so if you count 4, 8, 12, 16, 20, which now 21, that's 5. You see what I'm saying? So 2000 would have been 6.
No, 2000 would be the fifth one. No. 2000 would be the 5.
2004, 2008. That's 3. You feel me?
Right. 2012 is 4.
2016. 2021. That's 6.
So this goes back
to 7.
So 96 is the 7. Okay, now I see what you're saying. Okay,
yes,
got
sir.
You got me. Okay. So then this is a 24-year run. Okay, so I'm off by 1. Okay, I'm off by 4. Okay, so this is a 24-year run, right?
25 now, because we had the extra year.
Yeah, because they got this added year right here. Okay.
Yeah.
In which the girls out of Connecticut, there's two of them, and Sue Bird and Diana Taurasi have won 5 of these. So they have brought back these championships since the year 2000, 2004, 2008, 2012. No, I got it wrong. So 2004, 2008, 2012, 2016, and now 2021. These girls have won 5 gold medals playing basketball for the United States of America. How impressive is that, let alone that these girls have not only won that many gold medals, they've also brought respected championships back to the state of Connecticut for the Huskies also. Your thoughts on the run and reign that the women's basketball team has been able to do, especially with Diana Taurasi and Sue Bird and what they've been able to do or accomplish in their basketball playing careers?
Well, Diana Taurasi has to go down as she's in that very, very short conversation of the GOAT, right? The greatest woman of all time in basketball. To me, when you look at that skill set and just everything that she brings to the table. I mean, and then you look And, man, Sue Bird has been, even over the last couple of years, you know, helped lead her team to championships, even the WNBA. And I know that these girls have also made, like, their biggest bags of money across the pond playing basketball in the fall and winter months, or winter months playing over there. And I'm sure they've won championships over there. So, I mean, to me, I think it just continues to elevate the game. We have seen women's basketball rise to a completely different level in our lifetimes, right? Like, I think having that group come together, that Olympic team and everything that happened with that was one thing. And I feel like this should have been eight for them, because I could have swore they did put this team together in 92 when they first put the dream team together for the men. So I look at this, and to me, it's as impressive of a run for anybody on a basketball court on either side as far as what they've been able to accomplish, what they brought to the table. And, I mean, I can just honestly tell you that going back and look at it from all the different things that I've seen them bring on the court, all the different things I've read about them and whatever else, like, mad respect, and I consider myself very fortunate to have lived and grown up during a time and been very lucid during a time when I've been able to enjoy and appreciate their talent. And I wish I had, when I see it and you step back and take a look at it, I wish I had done more to appreciate it or show more appreciation for it, or taken even more time to soak in that talent that is Diana Taurasi and Sue Bird even more. Like, I've watched them play, but stepping back and looking at it, it's like, man, I probably should have watched them even a little more than I have now. So, much respect, and yeah, man, I'm very impressed.
Yeah, because it put them in, like, that conversation with, like, Michael Phelps and Simone Biles and, like, Gabby Douglas, like, who else got to think of, like, with an impressive medal count?
Look at Allyson Felix. They're talking about her being the oldest female to medal in women's track. Yeah. But these guys have to be in that same conversation. Carl Lewis.
Right, Carl,
you know what I mean?
Carl Lewis. Yep. Mm-hmm. Or Usain Bolt also. So it's like,
same kind of thing.
Like, these girls are in that conversation, which makes that even more, like, legendary that they've been able to bring five back, let alone in their respective careers, or what they were able to do in the court are incredible. So definitely I don't want to get past that. Now, on the other side of the spectrum with the men's basketball team, and I've been apologizing like crazy, especially within the barbershop also, but I'm going to do it here now. I was one of the people that were very mad at the way that they were playing out of the gate. They did not look well in their exhibition games and losing to Nigeria. That was the more embarrassing loss that I could think of. They also lost to France, and they also lost to Australia. And the way that they looked out the gate, I was like, there's no way that they're going to medal. They're losing the teams that they should be better than. And they get the addition of Drew Holiday, Devin Booker, and Chris Middleton to help fill out the roster. And I think all of a sudden everything's changing. Now, the thing was that somebody had to actually help me realize is the fact that due to the pandemic, things changed for the structure and the way things were happening for the USA team, because a lot of the other countries got to get their players together and have time to, like, have cohesiveness. The USA team still had the NBA season going on. So if they're still playing within the playoffs, they get to respectively come back and, you know, like, get to practice and learn each other. But a lot of them are still waiting for their respective seasons to, you know, end. And so they only really have, like, 2 or 3 weeks of, like, preparation or practice time to get to know each other. And I wasn't, like, you know, trying to give it credit that it deserved, you know. So when they get the addition of Drew Holiday and Booker and Middleton, things change. They get, like, more hands on deck, and they start running the table as soon as the, you know, the curtain is kind of drawn on the start of the Olympics. So shout out to them, you know, winning that first game up against Spain, taking care of business up against, I think, Australia next, and then winning the gold medal game just as recent up against France and getting their respected revenge against not only Australia but France in a game that meant the most in the gold medal game. And I really wanted to see what the United States would have looked like up against Slovenia, because the way that Luka was playing ball, everybody was like, well, this guy has not lost since he, you know, got on the court and started playing Olympic basketball. And he loses in the game in the semifinal with a critical block by Nick Batum to help France get to the gold medal game. And I wanted to see how it would have looked, but it didn't. And I feel like this is more of like a bitter taste for Luka moving forward. So I feel bad, you know, in 3 years, because I think they'll end up playing in 2024. I wonder how it's going to structure, or unless they push it to 2025. I hope they keep everything consistent with the 4-8-12, you know, and keep the numbers moving like that. But also going into this season, I want to see. Okay. And I want to see how it looks like, you know, moving forward into this season upcoming, how Luka looks, because last year it was a situation where Luka was the preseason MVP candidate, like leader, and he started off sluggish, like real slow out the gate, and then as the season progressed, this guy started getting awesome, and he started getting Dallas out of the dugout and made them relevant to be, I think, a sixth seed, and he was, I think, a fifth or sixth seed, or something like that, because they ended up playing the Clippers again, and the Clippers ended up eliminating them again. So I'm wondering how much of this experience carries him to be stronger in the upcoming season here in the NBA and also in the Olympics also. So we'll see how that happens. But your thoughts on the run that the Olympic team went on with Kevin Durant and company, and for Kevin Durant and all of the accomplishments he has now in his respected career. He leads USA scoring, three-point field goals made, things of that nature. Kevin Durant is like on top of the list on all of those statistical categories. How do you feel about how the men have accomplished things on the basketball floor?
You know, the interesting thing to me is the men have had a lot more turnover. And, you know, you just pointed out about the coming together and trying to get on the same page. Nobody would doubt that from the time that we started letting the pros go in 92, and even in some years before that, the talent level on the United States roster is deeper than any other roster. When you bring the challenge that you run into at times is you're playing some of these national teams and guys that have been part of that same system and same team for a long period of time. So they do play a little bit more as a cohesive unit and getting these guys on the same page. That's why, like, I think that these additions, bringing Holiday in a little bit just for his perimeter defense was key, getting some of these other guys in and trying to figure out kind of how to mesh them all together. You know, it did come together. And so as bad as people ripped Popovich, and as bad as, like, they really, you know, we were sitting in the shop watching all the game, even in the last couple games, and how many people want to pipe up and just dog them even early in games, and they just down a little bit early. But, you know, the fact that they were able to come back, win goal, avenge a couple of losses. I would have liked to see him against Luka too in some ways. I think that the U.S. had too many horses, and I think that it was probably the better game, because I think France was the more complete team, but that game, you know, like you said, it was one Batum block away from going the other way, so it's kind of fun to be able to avenge that loss. We've always talked about Kevin Durant, about being an electric scorer from the time he first came out of Texas to all his years in Oklahoma City and then Golden State. And now in Brooklyn, everybody's talked about what a matchup problem he is to be able to shoot that well for a guy that size. So it does not surprise me that a guy that's that prolific of a scorer has set all these records as far as for the United States. I mean, well-deserving, right? Like, I can't think of many guys that, like, just are better scorers than Kevin Durant. Just putting the ball in the hole, I can't think of many guys that are much better at all. So, well-deserved. I mean, listen, in three gold medal games for Kevin Durant, 30, 30, and 29, So, you know, when the chips are down on the table, when it counts, international game or whatever, rules different, don't matter. You can count on 30 points from your star. And if you're going to get 30 from your star and the rest of the guys chip in, the odds are that you come out of that game with a victory are very, very high. Mad respect to Durant and to this team for finding a way to get it put it together. It wasn't always pretty, but in the end, it's the W's that count, and it matters who walks out with the goal.
Did he play in 2016?
I'm
wondering if he did.
I know he's played in three gold medal games, so I think it was 12, 16, and 21. I'm not sure if he was on the was he on the 08 team?
No, he was. No, he came into the league. He's a rookie right there in 2008. The reason why is because so he was on the 2016 team. So he has three gold medals also. This is the interesting part about it, because I think Carmelo has three, and I think he was the one that had the most gold medals, and I think Kevin Durant now ties him there, but everything else across the board being, you know, more or less a situation where Kevin Durant not only has the tie and the medal count, but statistically Kevin Durant is, you know, dominating the board. Statistically, and he's 32. He'll be 33 September, I think, 29th. And the question is if he would play 3 years from now in 2024 to try and get his fourth gold medal to eclipse Carmelo, but not only to eclipse him, how much more can he put on a stat board to, like, you know, finish out his career? Because I definitely doubt that he'll play to 40 and get on the USA team also, but for Kevin Durant's career, not only in the league, in the NBA, for his Olympic approach too. I mean, how much do we look at that also? So I think he's taking that torch at least, or he's holding the torch with Carmelo and seeing how far he could push that situation. Your thoughts on it, because I definitely have a controversial topic that I want to try and dig into with you also.
I'm excited about that. So I think – The fact that it's 3 years instead of four before they come back makes it even more likely. And I also think that if you look at it in 3 years, because he's already got the scoring records, he just got Carmelo's scoring records. We know Carmelo probably ain't coming back, you know what I mean, to play in 3 years. So, you know, he can kind of be the old head on that next team as we continue to develop in this country that next wave of stars like Booker, like Mitchell, like Ball, LaMelo, I'm talking about, as a point guard, like Zion, like Tatum, as we continue to develop those guys, Durant may be that veteran on that next team, and he may decide that I wouldn't be surprised if he goes to go ahead and set that mark. I think it would be a nice way to cap his career as far as whether or not he decides to play any more in the league after that. I think that's kind of to be decided. But if I had to guess right now, barring major injury or something that we don't want to see happen, I would put Kevin Durant on that team at 35. I mean, missing even off of a short off season and everything else, and he had just been recovering, and he just played his heart out and tried and almost carried that team all the way through. And on the, you know, to the Eastern Conference Finals or whatever, and if they get past Milwaukee, that's probably a wrap. They go to the finals. So, you know, but there were a lot of times in this playoff run that he had to do it himself, and they end up not quite getting there, and I'm sure he's probably exhausted. He could have very easily just said, you know what, I'm gonna pack it away and go home until October. And for him to go out there and do what he did for this country, like I would be shocked if he's not there in 3 years. Well, it time will tell us what kind of role he has to play, but I'd be shocked if he's not on that team.
Okay, we do have some people in queue. I was not looking. I was looking at the script that I had written out. We have the villain, my co-host on Wednesdays. Welcome to the brunch. How are you doing this morning?
Villain, what's up, fellas? Good to hear your voices this fine Sunday. How you doing, brother?
doing all right. And we also have Eric in the building. Big Easy, welcome to the brunch. How are you feeling this morning?
Good morning, gentlemen. I'm feeling great. Just got out of church, so I got a good spiritual flow going on. Excited to be here with you guys.
Always okay, good to be with you, gentlemen.
Definitely. You guys missed a good grip. I definitely had the Bobby Bowden situation going, and you all know that I'm a Hurricane fan, so it's a bittersweet situation there. But I do want to talk about the Olympic situation. First and foremost, I started with the girls out of Connecticut, both being Sue Bird and Diana Taurasi. They are winning, as of this weekend, won their fifth gold medal. So I guess from 2004, Mike had to correct me, I had it wrong. So from 2004 till now, they've been able to attain five gold medals. And looking at the USA men's team, for them to go on the storm that they went on after losing three games out of the exhibition, how they were able to turn things around made it that much more interesting for this run here. And Kevin Durant being the guy atop all of the point totals and things of that nature, how do you guys feel about it? I'll start with you first, Eric, then I'll get to Barry.
Yeah, Timeless. This is what I expected to happen. You know, I think they had a little jet lag going on. They were tired from the NBA season. You know, you had guys like Tatum, Booker, Kevin Durant that were in the that went deep in the playoffs, and they just had to get their footing and their strength going. So it was great to see what Kevin Durant did. I mean, he's one of the best players in all of the world right now, plain and simple. He proved that right here on the Olympic stage. So it's a good thing, and it's a good thing for Team USA, for the women and the men. So we both came out with gold. I think for years to come, you know, on paper, you can look around, and we consistently put the best team out every time this event happens. So I just think these guys were tired. You know, it's a whole new scene. And they just had to get acclimated and get a chemistry going, which they did. So very proud of them.
Okay, Barry, your thoughts on the same question before I get controversial here.
Sure. I mean, first of all, you know, TP, I'm a big Florida State fan, so heartbreaking news to hear about Bobby Bowden. Rest in peace to one of the great college coaches. Loved watching him on the sideline, winning championships for Florida State, big rivalry with the Hurricanes. So I knew it was coming with the health concerns, but, you know, you never want to hear that. So rest in peace to Bobby Bowden. Now, listen, much respect to Diana Taurasi and Sue Bird winning their fifth gold. Big fan of Sue Bird. I like her game. I like what she stands for on and off the court. Diana Taurasi, she's a winner too. Not a huge fan, but, you know, respect her game, respect what she's done in this women's sport. USA just continues to dominate. They're just leaps ahead of the women in their category of basketball wise. Men's, listen, Kevin Durant is all about ball, and I was kind of surprised that he came back to play in the USA this year. After taking almost 18 months to recover from that devastating injury. You could tell he wanted to play and he was into it. So to Eric's point, it took a while for them to get their footing. I think I don't think the roster was put well together, particularly well. I think they missed some size. So I thought, you know, they got kind of exposed in some of the exhibition games and in the first game against France with Rudy Gobert. But I think they figured how to play together, and they rolled all the way to the gold medal game, which was a good game. France is a really good team. To Mike's point, they're well balanced. They got some good NBA players, so France is a good basketball team. Would have liked to see them against Luka, because Luka is like the hot ticket of the year. Everybody loves talking about how he's the best player ever to play basketball at 22 years old. So it would have been nice to see that. But listen, the USA gold, I mean, it's what we expected, and they came out and they showed that even though the world's catching up, USA basketball is still leaps ahead of the rest of the world. I didn't like their Twitter rant, Durant and Green, especially Green. I'm not obligated to root for you because, you know, just because I can say that it didn't look good, but because that's my opinion, you didn't look good, but, you know, it doesn't mean I'm not rooting for you, or it doesn't mean I don't think you're going to win. I just said you didn't look good. So whatever, it's too sensitive NBA players these days, but, you know, at the end of the day, they won, respect, and you know, it was a good Olympics all around for all sports.
I think there were times, though, that instead – I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No, go ahead, Mike. Continue.
No, I think there are times that instead of, like, whether – I didn't read the Twitter rant, so I can't comment on it wholeheartedly or to say anything, but it's one thing to say this didn't look good, but to see people that always root for these guys and whatever else, and to hear lots of takes and hot takes of people wanting to say, oh, this team's trash – and go that as to, I mean, almost slander this team at times, though. I think at times that's too far. When people, when they actually going together doing this just to try to represent, I think it's one thing to say a team doesn't look good or they didn't play well or whatever else, but I do think at times the average basketball fans went over the top in their slander of this team.
Yeah, I agree with you. I don't think we ever did that on our shows. I think we kind of called out the fact that it didn't look good, that the team looked like they were going to win. I think that it was a video. It's like American respect or something like that.
Barry, you're kind of in a matrix and kind of cutting out on us.
Yeah, I'm in a bad.
Unless that's my phone.
Yeah.
I want him to get better service because I did want to, like, reply to his, I guess, controversial situation on what Kevin Durant and Draymond Green had to say toward Kendrick Perkins, because Kendrick Perkins is an outspoken individual and he has a lot of interesting perspectives, and it's like, I guess people can't respond to him. I'm guessing that's the tone that he's taken toward that. I mean, that's probably something that drove those guys, and they got the gold. It's like, well, let us prove them wrong, what they have to stay button lip and not say anything, especially to somebody they know, especially the history that Kendrick Perkins has had with Kevin Durant for years now, especially making that run with Oklahoma City and all of the stuff that happened from Oklahoma City till now. You have to understand that they have ears and mouths, too. They're not robots. Like, people are going to have stuff that are hot buttons or pushes people's boiling point. And they can say what they have to say, especially when they accomplish something where people feel a certain way about them. I am one of the people that did not think that USA would have meddled because of the way they came out the gate. I was one of them. I was like, there's no way that they lose to Nigeria and think they're going to win gold. Like, that was bad to lose that way. And then lost to France and Australia. I was like, who are they showing me that they're better than? And then they get Drew Holiday, they get Middleton, and they get Booker, and they're off and running. So it's like, I understand what they needed as a driving force, and they didn't have all hands on deck. And plus, just like I discussed with Mike a little while ago, they only had a short time period of actually trying to get to learn each other. So I wasn't fully aware of that. I'm like, I know that they were playing in the NBA and playing their respective postseason. So I had to, like, come to grips with that. Like, okay, they didn't really have time to understand each other. But once they did, it clicked within weeks' time, and they ended up accomplishing the feat. And, yeah, like, you would have done it if people were bad-mouthing you, whether you played for the Yankees, if you played for UConn, if you played for the Giants, and they're like, oh, well, X player, you know, they should be better professional, things of that nature. They're not going to do something. You're going to take – that's bulletin board material. You're going to go out there and fight the fight and try to win it. So I get it. Certain people feel a certain way, but – I feel like the masses are on Kevin Durant, Draymond Green side, like the masses. Like, we have a discussion every day. Mike's a part of it. I got a lot of people that come around the barbershop and fan their hand at Kendrick Perkins. And me, personally, I'm not a big Kendrick Perkins fan when he's talking sports. Like, but, I mean, they go off of him like he's a great point person, and I feel like he's just an NBA player that has a perspective on basketball. So, I mean, to each his own, but I mean, what are they not supposed to have something to say? They just, what, These people are human at the end of the day. Anybody's going to respectfully respond. But, Barry, I don't know if you want to respond, because I do want to get into this controversial topic about the Olympics before I get away from Olympics.
Yeah, I know. I am still kind of in and out area. Can you hear me? Am I good?
Yeah, we can hear you. Now we don't. Okay, now you're good. Now we're good.
I'm in and out, right?
Go. Yeah, now you're talking. Go ahead, go.
Yeah, you know that, like, kind of like a kind of crappy area, and then it kind of comes back when I get to my house. So I'm, like, literally right there. All right, listen. Kendrick Perkins is going to, you know, have controversial comments. That's what he does. And, you know, he's good at it, and, you know, that's how he's making his bones these days. But, I mean, in general, I mean, like, it's like everybody doesn't need to, like, you know, like, everybody's not going to praise you, and they're not obligated to. So, and bow down to you and cater to you. So, I mean, listen, yeah, he's in his feelings. He said what he, you know, Kevin and Draymond said what they're said. And to Mike's point, not everybody was killing them. Like, they were just kind of calling out the fact they didn't look good. That's what it was. But, listen, I was one of those people that didn't think they looked good and thought they were in trouble. We said that on our shows. We said they looked like they were in trouble. You know, the people that take it personally, you know, those are the trolls. Like one of my family, he said, you know, a lot of your fans don't know you personally, and the people that hate you know you. They know you personally. So, I mean, that's what it is, and that's the life we live.
That's a tough way to, like, answer that. Like, I wouldn't want somebody in my corner if they know me and they don't like me. I don't do well with disingenuous people, especially with a guy like especially with a guy like Kendrick Perkins. That, I mean, yeah, you won a championship in Boston, but that clearly was not on your back. That was clearly Ray Allen, Rondo, Paul Pierce, and Kevin Garnett. That was not a Perkins, you know, situation. I mean, he's a role player on that team. And then he goes on a finals run with the Thunder while he gets there, and they fall short. And it's like, you already know that they have, like, history. These two have history not only on the team together, but they've been going at it in the media for years now, like for the past couple of years. So it's like, not only is he speaking bad about them, Kevin Durant is like, well, this is something that I don't even have to put that on the bulletin board with Pop. This will be a little post-it notepad that I put in my locker every game out here in Tokyo, and if we win, believe me, I'm going to have something to say. There's always something that pushes somebody. There's always something that drives somebody, whether it's a coach that don't believe in them, whether it's a teammate that don't want to give you the ball, whatever. It's always going to be a driving force, because we are humans. Like, we live off of that natural knack to go out there and do something. I don't care what sport you're playing. If it's marbles and you don't want to lose at marbles, if you're flipping quarters, you're going to try to outflip the court or whatever, like wrestling. Baseball, like, everybody got a competitive nature. Ain't nobody trying to lose, like, you know what I'm saying? And let alone within your own respective country, like, especially somebody that should be like, come on now, like, I feel like they could turn it around. You don't even have that same monotone. You just going off of how you want to carry the conversation. Like, I get it. You're trying to push the selling point for ESPN, who's on the decline, because I know people up there, like, ESPN's not doing well. And, rightfully so. I mean, there's going to be people that are on Kendrick Perkins' side and feel bad for him, but the masses are totally on Kevin Durant and Draymond Green's side. And to be brutally honest, I'm going to be brutal, personally honest, I am not a big fan of Draymond Green when he talks. When he talks, I am not a fan. But it's like, this time, it's like, they have a point. Like, and it's Kendrick Perkins, the guy that they're pointing the gun at. So it's like, I get it. And he doesn't do well defending himself. And it's like, people try to go to bat for, you know, guys that talk their crap and slander people, but they can't defend themselves when that junk come back to them, i.e. Skip Bayless, when he tried to call out, you know, Slava and all of those guys, and then Jalen Rose called them out, and then everybody in ESPN comes to Skip Bayless's defense. Like, this happens across the board when they can't defend themselves, but they talk enough crap to, like, move the needle. So that's how I feel about that. If you can't defend yourself, you better watch what comes back to you. It's called karma, and believe me, I stay out of her way.
Yes, sir.
I hear you. And you know, I think I agree. I listen. I hate when Draymond Green talks. I really do. Like, he says nothing to me. Like, everything he says, like, annoys me pretty much. But to your point, they had a point. And I'm not here defending Kendrick Perkins. I'm defending his right to have an opinion. And I also hate the fact that NBA players these days are super sensitive. Like, no, like Charles Barkley says something, here comes Draymond Green. Like, that's his opinion. You don't have to agree with it. Like, these guys don't get paid to kiss your ass. Like, I don't come on this show to kiss these guys' ass. I come on this show to give my opinion. You know what I mean? So from that perspective, I get it. But to your point, TP, Kendrick Perkins, you got to walk around with the egg on your face because you were wrong. And if you're man enough to admit it, great. If not, then you know what? You just don't look good.
Real fast. I think at times we have to look and see, too. I mean, sometimes people, you can call them sensitive, but sometimes when people say no comment or if they don't want to talk about it or they don't rise to it, then you also get the other side of it where people are like, you know what, I wish these guys won't even give their opinions or these guys don't show anything. So, I mean, listen, sometimes in that kind of spotlight, too, you're damned if you do and you're damned if you don't respond.
Absolutely. Absolutely, because the media controls the voice. And that's what Durant's trying to do. He's trying to control his narrative, like LeBron's trying to do for his whole career, to control how people talk about him and control his narrative. You know what I mean? And it's just a different world with Twitter. And even Michael Jordan said, I wouldn't survive in this Twitter world. When I was playing, you know what I mean? Like, everybody, you know, knows that. So it is what it is, brothers. You know what I mean?
Okay. And last, when I say this, you say that the media can say what they want to say. Why can't they say what they want to say? Like you can talk
Who's
about
they?
Me, but I can't.
The players?
No, you said the media, like what Kendrick Perkins is saying. You said that he's going to say what he's going to say. Like,
right,
they
should
be able to defend themselves. Like, Barry, that's like
Absolutely.
You being a basketball player for the New York Knicks and heard somebody out of the Post or the Daily News slaughtering you. And then next thing you know, you go on a 16-0 run in the postseason and bring a championship back to the Knicks where everybody in the Post and the Daily News was burying you. Saying that, oh, you can't bring nothing back to New York, and you MVP, this, that, third. But you going to sit humble and come back to Stanford or Connecticut and be like, oh, that's it, cherry on top, not going to say nothing? You're going to be like, yo, first off, after in the click you claim, like, you're going to go off Tupac. Like, you like they can't say nothing. So, like come on, we got to be real here. Like, the people, I've lined up with you, bro. Like I know you got a competitive nature. Like, bro, like you can't do that one side of the coin. Like I said, karma's a bee. And I stay out of her way because it'll come back to you. And the way that ESPN uses him as a point person, like Kendrick Perkins has this wealth of knowledge in the basketball game. You have been on Team Jets, but, like, you have not been a stud nowhere. Nowhere in your career to start burying you. Like that's why I'm like, okay, if he could say what he wants, but they can't say nothing back, like, that's why I was like, Jalen Rose, Barry, Skip Bayless. But the same dude we talking about, Jalen Rose, Barry, Kendrick Perkins, too, like, because Kendrick was wilding, not trying to be understanding the other people that ain't speaking up for themselves. Because Kendrick Perkins is in front of millions of people on a TV screen. You know what I'm saying? Like, and these guys are big figure guys because they're actually carrying the USA on their back. That they speaking up for themselves, and now it's like, oh well, we need to help Kendrick Perkins out because he spoke against them and they defending themselves. It's like, huh? Like, I don't get it. I like I said, I'm not a big fan of Draymond when he's talking his junk, but it's like, when they got the gun, it ain't no fun when the rabbit got it. You see what I'm saying? So it's like, be careful. Like, and that's what Kendrick Perkins is.
Hey, can I chime in real quick, Timeless?
Yeah, and I do have somebody at the door here, too.
All right. Perfect. Now you know the best defense to all this, you said it when you're going on. You know, they may be talking all this junk, but guess what? The actions speak louder than words. So
exactly.
at the end of the day, they could say what they want. You know, if I was a professional athlete, I would let my actions, I wouldn't even get caught up in this. You know, you look at you know, some of the best teams, throughout all professional sports, if you don't let the hype or the trash talk get to you, these teams succeed. You don't want to fall into that trap. So you want to let your actions let these guys talk. That's what they get paid for.
Exactly.
It is opinion. So there's no reason to get worked up over someone's opinion. That's fine. That's great. He has a voice. And if you want to respond back, that's fine too. But don't get caught up in it. Let your actions speak, you know, so.
I totally agree with Eric. I totally agree with Eric, and that's kind of where I was going with it. I agree with you. Like, you know, if somebody comes and talks, like, why can't the players have a forum? But I know plenty of players back when we were growing up that didn't say anything and had people, you know, had people come after them all the time. Michael Jordan had people attacking him, especially when his father passed away and when he went to Atlantic City during the Eastern Conference Finals. But he let his play do the talk in Game 3. He came back and put a 40-piece on him. You know what I'm saying? So a lot – me, personally, I don't come back to people. I'll let my actions speak louder than words, and he who laughs the hardest. So, like, their play in the gold medal game should have been their stamp, and that's it. But then they came back and talked. And some people like that, and some people like me don't feel it's necessary. I'm not saying it was wrong. I'm not saying they weren't justified. I'm just saying it's not necessary. But
here's the thing. They may even tell you it's not necessary, but they still may feel like they need to respond because they're tired of this whole narrative to where the media can say what they want to say, to where all that can be media-driven. And finally, people are fighting back and saying, you know what? Times have changed. It's a time now where we can have a voice, too. And here's the thing. Mm-hmm. Sometimes people are going to say they're sensitive. Sometimes they can say they're being defensive or whatever. But times have changed, and so you know what? Damn it, we're going to be heard, too.
And this is the crazy part about it. You said Michael Jordan wasn't out there speaking. Do you know they said the biggest trash talker in NBA history was Larry Bird and Michael Jordan? Like, these dudes talk. Like, they didn't want to be in front of the media like
the
that. Because they know everybody would blow that junk out of proportion. If Michael Jordan was like, the New York Post was out there talking junk because they didn't want the Bulls to come into New York and do something to him. Or, oh, he was out there doing $21,000 hands in Atlantic City because that's what the amount was or something like that. And next thing you know, he'd go out there and win. Or the flu game that happened in Utah. Oh, he's BSing with the flu game. He was drunk or whatever. It's like if anything Michael said, the world is going to go on fire. And then looking at the situation with Kendrick Perkins and Kevin Durant, it's more than just this USA run. And you, just like everybody said, including Eric, let your actions speak louder than the words. But it's like, okay, so they did. They didn't say nothing the whole run. They get the gold medal, and then they said something. Like, it's over now. Like just like you said, he who laughs the hardest, you know what I'm saying? After they accomplished it, they accomplished it. So now they get to laugh. Like I don't get the fence jump. Like they get to do what they want to, and plus they are humans. They are not robots. These guys are people, bro. They are people, let alone they are athletes competing just like everybody else, been practicing for 4 years to accomplish the feat of getting gold. Getting gold. Like, I seen something on the 4x1 in the relay. It was an Asian country. I can't think of which one it was. The second leg of the baton passing, he pulls like a hamstring or a muscle in his leg. And then you see the third leg looking at him, and he put his hands on his head like, oh my God. Like, he can't go backwards to go get the baton. He got to wait till this guy get there, so it's over for them. They've been practicing and training that for 4 years, bro. So it's like them waiting to try to accomplish to get another gold medal in another 4 years and getting here and then hearing back home they're slandering us and we can't say nothing. We got to be real here. I don't know. But
I agree, TP. And I'm not going to keep going because I know you got another point. I'm just saying, like, in my mind, Jordan was a trash talker on the court. Bird was a trash talker on the court. Off the court, in the media, they didn't do all that when they played, and they might have done it after, who knows. But that's the kind of difference. Like, to me, it's just they have their right to speak. I just wish they didn't. That's all. And didn't come, like, out of, you know, 100 people, 99 might agree with you. That one person that disagrees with you, come after him. I get it. But this one is personal. To your point, TP, him and Kendrick, this is personal. It goes back a little bit deeper than just the USA run. So that's all. But you know what? It is what it is, and it's just a different day. It's a different day that I have to, as a 40-year-old person, I have to accept. So
right, Right, times are changing. We do have Aaron in the building. Welcome to the brunch. How are you feeling this afternoon?
I wish I could tell you I'm feeling good, but I'm not. But, you know, it is what it is. You know what I'm saying? I'm going to go ahead and pick up where Barry left off. For those of you guys who have known me for a while, I am very, very opinionated. And for those of you guys who follow me on social media, I'm sure everybody sitting here has seen it. I was one of the guys who was said, and I put this in bold, I would be shocked if this team meddled. Not just won gold, meddled, got on the stand. And so the fact that they did that, again, it's egg on my face. I wear that shit proudly. I'm not going back down from what I said. But my point is this, okay? As much as Kevin Durant and Jamon Green, you know, jumped on their Instagram Live, as much as these players, you know, talked their shit and did what they needed to do, you really have to understand that, you know, the way you guys started and the way you guys, you know, played wasn't conducive to USA basketball. You know what I'm saying? Like, you drop two preseason games, you go into pool play, you drop the first one, you know what I'm saying? We as Americans were spoiled, you know what I'm saying? We've had LeBron James and company, you know, over there beating Bama by 40, you know what I'm saying? Hasn't lost a game, hasn't lost 25 straight Olympic games, and all of a sudden you're losing preseason games and pool play games. So with that being said, I understand, talk your shit because you earned it. Don't get it twisted. The egg on my face is scrambled with cheese. I'm eating that joint. But ultimately, you got to understand, you know what I'm saying, where we as analysts, we as fans, when we as supporters and lovers of the game and lovers of the sport come from. Now, to what everybody's being said, you know what I'm saying, I agree with what TP said. You know what I'm saying? Like, and KD hit me up on Instagram right now and was like, yo, now talk your shit. I couldn't say nothing. You know what I'm saying? They went out there and they did that. Was it pretty? No. Was it in the manner in which you wanted to? No. But I said what I had to say. He now has the right or the responsibility to retaliate and say what he has to say and those subsequently. Like, ultimately, like, I've been here with Sports City for almost 12, 13 years. The amount of times that I said something, you know what I'm saying, and had to eat that, you know what I'm saying? I'd be a big, big boy, man. You know what I'm saying? I'd be big. If you're going to wear, if you're going to talk your shit, you know what I'm saying, make sure it's sweet, because if that joint has to come back, like Thomas said, karma is a bee, and he tried to stay out of her way, sometimes karma comes back and taps you on the shoulder, and you got to be man enough or woman enough, if you're a female reporter or whatever you identify as, to take that. You know what I'm saying? So ultimately, salute to the USA basketball team. If Kendrick Perkins is having some type of way about what he got to say, you made that bed, laying it. You know, and everybody alluded to, he and KD got some beef, so it is what it is.
I can't remember. I forget what Jalen Rose was calling Kendrick Perkins out for, because Kendrick Perkins was talking junk about somebody too, and Jalen was like, relax. I forget what it was that they just went at it about a few weeks ago, and it's like, this is happening to him at a crazy clip, like within weeks' time, that he's getting caught out there. You know what I'm saying? And it is Kendrick Perkins with a history, with a guy that is big as Kevin Durant. Like, anything, like, this is comparison to what Barry said is Michael Jordan. If comparison of the level, I'm not saying KD is Michael Jordan, right? But let's just say Kevin Durant is on that parallel of where Michael Jordan was in the league. Like, if Kevin Durant says anything, that's going to go spread like wildfire, let alone Kendrick Perkins is talking junk about them. Like, I don't care. I'm going to speak up. Like, Barry, you know me. I'm talking. Like, I'm talking to any sport I'm playing. Anything I'm playing, if you say anything to me, it's coming back to you. Let alone we won the championship or we won gold. Like, boy, you better buckle up, because it's not going to look pretty for you. It's not. So I get it. I got a competitive nature. I'm going to talk trash, especially if you coming for me. Like, it is what it is at the end of the day. And just like you said, it's egg on people's face. I was one of them. Mike, you even heard me when we was in the barbershop. I'm up there saying, I don't think they're going to meddle. And the next thing you know, they put it together. Because to be honest, it's like, I think Sirius or Barry said, we were spoiled to have like LeBron in them because they were constructed well. This team that they have, the USA team right now, is not constructed well. Jerry Colangelo cannot set that team up no more. He's a rich guy that could pull strings and push buttons and make things happen. He is lucky that he had hired guns to get them out of this situation. If you watch that USA team, all they did was shoot threes. Everybody shot threes. They started hitting them, and that's what helped them get by. That team is not constructed well, and they are lucky they were able to bring gold back. Like, to be brutally honest.
That's why he's stepping down. And that's also why, like, this year, I would say the selection process has been as hard as it was since 04. 04 is when a lot of guys opted not to come, and it didn't turn out the way they wanted it to turn out. But with all the other things that have happened over the last year plus, the selection process was much more difficult this year and find a way to put it together. But Colangelo stepping down, it's not his baby anymore. Now the buck gets passed to Grant Hill. We've seen Grant Hill as a player. We've seen him on college level, pro level. We've seen him as an analyst at times. Now we're going to find out if he's, you know, everybody's thought highly intelligent, whatever. Everybody's always had that high of an opinion of Grant Hill. Now we're going to see what, you know, this is his next chance to write another chapter. So I think it falls on Grant Hill now.
Okay, we don't have that much time left. I did want to get into a controversial topic. Breaking news right now, the New York Yankees baseball player Anthony Rizzo is on the IL COVID. This is big for the Yankees because I wonder how many people are going to have to get tested within the Yankee organization because they probably all have been close quarter with him, especially being in a dugout and being around his bat or helmet or things of that nature. So thoughts and prayers to Anthony Rizzo. I do want to see what's up with the Yankees now because they are playing well since getting all of the additions to the team. The controversial topic that
I see more of it. I'm scared.
You
get nervous.
Boy, it's a whole nother situation. Please, Lord, help us on this earth right now because people are playing around with the Delta variant and people that aren't vaccinated are, you know, more of a threat to get it and, you know, spread it and things of that nature. So it's like, I judge this with a grain of salt on how this thing is going down because it's like I understand why people don't want to get the vaccination, but then again, it's like to help us to try to get the vaccination so we could try and stop it like somehow, some way. So it's like I don't know how to judge it because it's not FDA approved, things of that nature, but that's a whole nother can of worms to open, and I know that could get heavy here too. We are close to the end of the show, though. But the controversial topic that I did want to add toward the Olympics was, toward especially Simone Biles, but also Sha'Carri Richardson and how things happened in this approach toward the Olympics. And the one that hurts me the most is Simone because, just like I said previously, you know, all of these athletes practice as much as possible to get here within a 4-year span, and they were penalizing her because she was so nasty at what she did. They were like, well, other girls can't do what you do, so if you do something crazy, we not going to give you a perfect 10. We going to penalize you. It's like, that's ridiculous. Meanwhile, this girl could potentially be on her last run in the Olympics or not be as great as she is now. 4 years down the road, you take that from her, and then she plays in another. I think she was doing the bars and ended up getting bronze. And it's like, I wonder if her heart was there to even compete. So that's the controversial situation I wanted to get to. It pissed me off. I mean, Sha'Carri's situation, I don't know if she did smoke or around it or if it in her system or whatever, but she smoked marijuana, and it held her off of the track. And I really felt like she'd be hard to beat because that girl could run like crazy. So I'm wondering if, you know, in 4 years, if she still has the same strength of speed or, you know, can keep her endurance or athleticism and don't run into a boyfriend and end up getting her pregnant and, you know, slowing her down. Like, it's so many different things that I looked at. But we have 5 minutes. I mean, we could do that on outro, how you guys feel about it, but we will close it up as best possible. The Olympics.
I got you on these two topics real fast.
Okay.
And I'll be quick. As we go throughout the next week, I'd like to throw in some other Olympic news. But Richardson, sad. She did break the rules. She admitted to it. As far as Simone Biles, I saw the mental health, the thing where they said they're not going to give her full credit. You and I talked about that multiple times. I didn't think that was right. But I will say this. I'm not sure that that was in any way related to what was going on mental health-wise. As far as we know, that could have been going on for a little while with this sort of change in environment, whatever. As much as it took to see her not be able to compete in some of those ways, gymnastics is a crazy, dangerous sport. So I'm glad she didn't put herself out there if she really felt like things were off and she really felt like she wasn't right. It is very sad to see her perform to that level and not be able to do that. As far as both of them are young enough and still electric enough, that especially with it just being a three-year comeback, I think we could see them both in 3 years. I would argue that it's even better set up for Richardson to win in 3 years than it would have been this year. Those Jamaicans ran something serious. In that 100 meters, I think that she would have medaled probably and knocked one of them off. I don't know about gold, but both of these women could still do special things in 3 years, provided they stay healthy and that kind of thing. And so I hope Simone refines it. I hope she takes a little time to just step away and recommit herself at some point later on, because she's dominant enough that she can get back to that form. So best to both of them. And there were still some electric things. Anybody get a chance to see it, go watch the men's 400-meter hurdles.
And what bothers me is, like, okay, so if, let's just say a guy, I don't know, I don't even know guy gymnastics or a gymnast, you know, but say a guy could do, like, a 1080 backflip or something like that, and you're going to penalize him because the rest of the world can't do it, that's unheard of.
Like, that's unfair at all.
Like I could do it, but you can't? That's like, I don't get it. Like, where did you make that rule?
That's why I said,
like,
where did you get more points? Anything you can do, I can do better. I can do this, and you cannot do it. You know what I mean? Like, that's just still good.
That's crazy. I don't know. This is a whole nother can of worms. I thought we would have time to get to it, but we filled up and get a good closure to the show. So I need closure from all of you. If you guys want to give a shout out to Bobby Bowden passing away, you can. I can't lie. Like, you know, me and competitive nature, I could not stand Florida State and him being the general or the, you know, the king of the situation. I couldn't stand him, but like, I definitely don't want to see any harm or him passing. So now it's like I'm on the situation where I worry or care about him and the family, thoughts and prayers to the Bowden family, Terry Bowden, his son, you know, things of that nature. But I'll, you know, start to close up now. I'll start with you first, Eric. Thank you for stopping by. The brunch, plug, closeout, shout out, anything that you like to promote as we close the doors here at the brunch.
Yeah, no doubt. Rest in peace to Bobby Bottoms. He'll be missed. A true legend, no doubt about that. It's always a pleasure being here with you gentlemen. Thank you to all our listeners and supporters. Check us out, sportscitychefs.com. Make sure to get the merch. Get out there and represent. Everybody have a blessed day out there.
Same to you. Hope to hear from you later. Aaron, I need a plug, close out, shout out as we shut the doors here at the brunch.
Man, it's your boy, Sears, up in that 412 and the 703, man. Such a pleasure to pop in with you guys for a brief minute. Talk about some things, man. Definitely continue to check us out, www.sportscitychefs.com, the blogs, the merchandise, check out Clubhouse, Barbershop, with a lot of us over there doing the same thing here. So, man, definitely check us out over there. So, man, it's such a pleasure, man. But before we go, you mentioned Simone Biles, and again, salute to her. Salute to her. And her team and her supporters for rallying around her and giving her enough to get back out there and compete and get back on that medal podium. You know, it's, again, as somebody who dealt with mental illness, as someone who has, you know, a lot of friends and family members who deal with mental illness, the fact that she was able to overcome that to a level to compete, and get back on that, on the podium, is something to be commendable to my man who said she may need to take some time off. I definitely encourage that. And it's something that we'll probably get into on the Carlos Cookout on Wednesday. But, man, again, thanks for letting me jump on. I will catch up with you guys later.
No doubt. Mike, I'll come to you. Give me a plug, close out, shout out, anything that you'd like to promote as we shut the doors here at the brunch.
Man, just shout out to the men's and women's basketball teams. Shout out to Simone getting back on the stands. Big thumbs down to the judges. Tell all the other people not to let their athletes do it if they think it's going to be dangerous to them, but don't penalize somebody for being able to set the bar higher. Otherwise, how are we going to continue to improve and how are we going to continue to amaze and grow if we don't allow people to do that? So shame on you, world gymnastics or whatever, for trying to stem that. That's sad. Shout out to men's and women's wrestling, having as good a performance in a long time. I'm hoping to share more about that. But rest in peace to Coach Bobby Bowden. As you guys know, we've talked about over the last week, a lot of other things going in sports, free agency, baseball thing. Man, everybody take care. Do everything that you can to prevent the spread. Let's not have a thing where all the things that we love and enjoy get canceled and everybody's sitting at home. Hoping that we can just stream some stuff and keep ourselves occupied. So everybody take care of yourself and be safe. Stop by the barbershop on Clubhouse. Check out all the Sports City Chef stuff. And just continue to support. And anything that we do can't be done without the support of listeners. So thanks for doing so. And once again, I'll say each and every time, if it wasn't for the timeless one, Mr. TP, with me on this stage with you guys, and I appreciate it greatly. Much love and respect, TP, and thanks for having me.
For sure, and it's an interesting word that you just said that made me think about everything that has happened on an Olympic stage. The word is judges. And I think back to the year of 1996, and there was a young guy out of a city called Grand Rapids, the state is Michigan, and his name is Floyd Mayweather Jr., and a fight where he's fighting for the gold medal and is beating the crap out of the guy and loses to the guy because the judges said that he lost the fight, and he said, I can't do this anymore, I'm going pro. I still even remember the speech that he had after that fight, because he was literally going to cry. He was going to cry. Floyd was so mad because he was tattooing this guy, and they didn't give him credit for it. And it's like, why do the judges rob talent or people that are out there out performing or out dueling or doing whatever they can just because they have that power to say yay or nay? It's a whole nother discussion. That's a can of worms I can't wait to get to. Barry, I need a plug to close up, shout out. I'm telling you, this could continue to go on and on and on. The judges. Barry, I need a plug, close out, shout out, anything that you like to promote as we shut the doors here at the brunch.
Yeah, listen, sportscitychefs.com. Get on the website, read the blog. Shout out to the Clubhouse boys at the barbershop. Love listening to those guys when I get a chance to. So I encourage everybody listening to go listen to those guys. You know, we got shows all week. I'm sure the NFL show will be popping off soon. We got the cookout. We got the brunch. We got the buffet, baseball buffet. So always something to listen to. Dave's got his lunch hour break. A lunch break, you know, fried cheese and a sandwich, you know, so definitely go listen to that. You know, TP, you always doing a great job. Love working with you. Can't wait to do more. You know, listen to Simone Biles, man. Only thing I got to say, just like Siri said, you know, mental health is real. And you know, I didn't suffer from it, but I had bouts and, you know, listen, I was probably more depressed than I let on. At a lot of times, and there's people out there that are depressed or whatever, you don't even know, don't know how to deal with it, know how to talk about it. So respect to her to bringing the light on it, in the way that she did. So listen, the Olympics were great. You know, I wish it could be better, but, you know, it is what it is. And, you know, listen, support. Love you guys. Out.
SportsCityChefs.com. You already know how this go down. Check us out. I think the NFL boys will be back tomorrow. Just like you said, Dave will be having shows. We're starting to fill up as best as possible. Continue to check out the website, purchase merch, Shout out to the Jordan Family Foundation that's been holding us down in that forum. Like I said, thoughts and prayers with the Rizzo family and Anthony Rizzo bounce back. I'm really worried about what the Yankees do, especially while they're playing good right now. I'm praying for the Bauer family for such of a huge loss for everybody in college football. This is an epic time in sports, man. And at the end of the day, we all need each other regardless of how the situation go down. But on that note, tell a friend to tell a friend that it's the Chefs again. And if they don't know, now they know.
Sports City, Sports City. Chefs, Chefs. Sports City, Sports City. Chefs, Chefs. Sports City, Sports City. Chefs, Chefs. Sports City, Sports City. Chefs. Kaboom. Sports City Chefs is in the room. Cooking up hot topics to put up on your spoon. They well in tune. Blown like a flower in June. Superman verse MF Doom. The clouds loom. So tell a friend it's the Sports City Chefs again. Pay attention, tune in, we on the set again. Sports City, Sports City, Chef, you, Chef, you. Sports City, Sports City, Chef, you, Chef, you. Yeah. Cabin. Taj.
Woo! Connecticut.